You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters. Episode 6, Biodynamics. It's What's for Dinner? With host Linda Borgi and guest Stuart Lundy from Virginia.
Hey, how are you? Linda Borgi here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? What a great day. What a great day. How are you, Stuart?
I'm good.
I have Stuart Lundy on the line, and Stuart Lundy came to me via Evan Foles, you know, the Farmyard soil doctor. I love saying soil doctor. And he said to me, Stuart Lundy, and you have to get together. Stuart is the top expert in biodynamics, insofar as Evan is concerned, in the country. And I said, oh, yeah, I have to. So immediately I asked Stuart if he would come on and tell us a little bit about everything that he's doing right there in Virginia. Right, Stuart?
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about your farm, Perennial Roots Farm.
Sure. Yeah, we're here on the Eastern Shore of Virginia, which they call it the land of easy living because there are no rocks in the soil to speak of. So it's very easy to work. It's a subtropical climate. So we've got a long growing season. We've got ducks, geese, rabbits, turkeys, chickens, sheep, hogs. We're looking to get cattle, hopefully by the end of this year. We've got about a 5-acre orchard that's starting to come on. And then we've got a market garden, and we do mixed vegetables, jams, tinctures, salves, and we also do different kinds of meat, eggs. And for the most part, it's just me and Natalie. And we hired TJ last August, but other than that, it's the two of us.
And when did you start your farm?
We started back in 2010, and it began with the idea of growing our own food for ourselves, and we still do most of that. But it pretty quickly became more than that. And it's kind of one of those things, you know, you get eggs, well, you need some bacon to go with your eggs. And bit by bit, a garden grows into a farm.
Isn't it funny? Now, how old are you?
I'm 32.
You're 32 years old. So you started this when you were 25.
I think that, yeah, that's right.
When you're 25. And you started this exactly where you are today.
Yes.
Isn't that something? Now, and you started it to grow food for yourself.
That was the plan.
That was the plan. Now, when and where did biodynamics come on the scene for you?
I will say it took 2 years. We happened to be in Italy, and we were going from different farms just seeing what people did there and visiting some vineyards. And there we found out about biodynamics. And I didn't know anything about it and wasn't even familiar with works peripherally associated with it. And it kind of sat on the back burner for a bit. But once we got back, we started to incorporate some of those practices. And what's interesting to me is that you can see zones on our farm that were treated, because we only started with a small plot. We have 50 acres, but we only started with about 2 acres under biodynamic treatment. And then we kind of moved out almost in rings from where the house is. And now everything's under treatment, but you can see definite zones. And they're so clear that I had someone visit and they asked if we'd had a fence there, which we hadn't. It's just, that's how different it looked when it looked like something had been, there'd been one paddock there, but no, it was just that it had been treated.
Okay, so let's go over, because the listeners are new to biodynamics, and we do have Abby Porter has been interviewed, so we do have a little bit on biodynamics. I mean, I grew biodynamically for 21 years and was the first intern over at the Pfeiffer Center Garden in Chestnut Ridge. That's where I came upon biodynamics. But how did you learn about it? I mean, was it just Googling or?
Oh, it started with, we read some articles at Acres USA that kind of tipped the scales towards it. I mean, we understood that there was a concept there, but I did a lot of reading. I went through probably 6 or 7 biodynamic books, and I was about ready to call it quits because it just talks in a vocabulary that was utterly unfamiliar to me. It just
I know.
It sounds like nonsense. And then I finally got to Pfeiffer's works.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, I can deal with it. Like he talks about, okay, here's the microbial population. He says like the 500 horn manure has a bacterial population that's similar to like earthworm castings. And I'm like, okay, I can track with this.
Right.
And that helped me ease into understanding some of the other concepts, but it wasn't easy. And we actually started doing it before we'd ever, taken a workshop on it or anything like that. And that's the same with farming. We didn't do internships or anything. We just jumped into it. And so we did the same thing with biodynamics. Since then, I've done workshops, gone to conferences. I've been to Hugh Courtney's farm and with Earth Legacy Agriculture and done their fall workshop for several years now. And so by the end now, I probably made all of the preparations several times now.
It's so interesting. You know, Hugh Courtney, you bring back these names, because I was connected to kind of like the source that you mentioned, Pfeiffer. Now, Dr. Pfeiffer entered the country here, the United States, in Chestnut Ridge, New York. And that is where biodynamics began, right there. At Josephine Porter, Abby Porter's mother, was the head of the Biodynamic Association. And she was the prep maker, the keeper of the preps for many, many, many years. So even just reading about your farm and everything that you have there, you plot me right back to where I was when I was in your age group, in my mid-30s, I knew nothing about farming, and now I had 23 sheep, I had 2 milking cows, I had 50 chickens, and I'm stirring. Well, it was a recipe, and I figured that I didn't really have to understand how it worked for it to work. I'll just follow the recipe. And that's pretty much exactly what I did for many years. But up until now, I have a much deeper understanding. But you're right. It's really painful to read, isn't it?
Yeah. It can be a real stumbling block. And I'm really, when I talk to people about biodynamics, I more prefer to show them how it works and where it's worked on our farm. And just to start with that, because how you explain it to yourself is going to be different for each person. And some of the jargon that can surround certain presentations of biodynamics can be off-putting, so I just basically skip that.
Right.
And what's nice is that I live in an area that's it's got so much conventional agriculture that to talk to anyone about biodynamics, I have to be flexible and find an analogy that works for them where they are, and that keeps me from keep having dogmatic jargon, and I'm able to meet people and make it work for them. But by sticking with it works and try it, they can figure out the explanation themselves. They could say it's energy or microbes or enzymes or nature spirits, whatever works for them. Right. Because it's good. It's just about the fact that it does work.
Well, I think we do have to meet people in their own place. I had an experience just today. I'm all my equipment, like I said, is up in a trailer in Walker Valley, New York. And I feel like I'm farming here with a plastic fork and a knife. And, I want to swipe off a 3-foot by 40-foot section in the front of the house here because that's where the sun is. I'm carving out every area that the sun is. So I called the landscaper, to see if they could remove the sod. And he said, "Do you believe in Roundup?" And I thought about that, but I didn't quite know what there is to believe in, first of all. But my grandmother taught me that you get more with honey than you do with vinegar. We had a nice conversation, and he came by. What was the wind-up of that story? He got a little bit of information, and he's going to drop off his 5-horsepower rear-tine tiller here on Saturday. For me,
oh,
to,
nice.
To, for me, because he's so busy. for me to swipe it off myself, and I'll give them $20. So we do have to meet people where they are, because if we're defending anything, right, we're going to get a lot more things to defend, right?
Yep.
So we don't need to defend. We could do by showing. And when you bring up the conventional agriculture, you're right. You do things through your own actions. Where I was farming in Walker Valley, right, it was hard pan soil. But I knew that I could stir and spray. And that's what I did. And that my farm went from forest to farm in 6 months with a full crop of heirloom tomatoes pre-sold to the restaurant across the river before I put a plant in the ground. So it does work. And does it work because we believe it works? Hey, I don't know. But I really don't care, to tell you the truth. I follow the recipe and I stir and I spray. And right here in Beaufort, honest to God, the sand is turning into humus, Stuart.
That's wonderful.
Just like in Egypt, right?
Yeah.
Sekhem. So tell us about a biodynamic farm in the spring, because what we're going to do with Stuart has agreed, we're lucky, Stuart agreed to do a couple of these episodes with us. And because biodynamics tends to be based around seasons, right? Maybe we could do seasonal episodes. And now is the spring, and now everything has to be done at the same time. So let us know about the chaos on a biodynamic farm in the spring.
Oh, boy. Right now. Yeah, it's this time where everything's exploding. I have a million ideas for what I want to do on the farm. It's like buds on a tree, and if I don't prune that tree, they'll work at cross purposes, and I won't get good fruit. So that's so we were pruning the trees. We're painting tree paste.
Yes.
On all of the trees, and as each tree gets bigger, both of those tasks take longer and longer.
Yes, they do.
And it's just like, wow, okay. I thought it sounded like it was going to be easy at first. It was, because they were tiny.
And they grow quickly, and they grow quickly.
They do. And we're just like, we've gone through most of our compost has been put into beds now from the last season. And what we do is if we weed any new beds, we just put those in 5 gallon buckets and carry that and add that to the compost pile. So we actually already have probably about 2 tons of compost going just from what we've prepared from beds this season. So we've already got a lot going for the next season. That's just by weeding.
How much under cultivation?
Our market garden area is about an acre and a half, but we only use about a third of that at a time. So our strategy is to do basically 2 years of cover crops. So they're building up soil for 2 years, and then we have one third of taking stuff out. So 2 years in, 1 year out, and we just move the whole garden. So by the time it comes back to one spot, we don't actually have to think about crop rotation, because we move the whole garden.
Smart. Oh boy.
And then there's the compost on top of it and the sprays. But doing 2 years in, 1 year out, even without composting and sprays, you kind of have a net gain every time. So
most definitely. Now, do you do any starts in greenhouses?
We do. We've been doing so many
seeds. so many seeds, such little time.
Yeah. A lot of seeds. We do herbs and flowers. We do a lot of greens. We've transplanted out a lot of onion starts and garlic. And it's just interesting to see that as we save seeds, how much better they become.
Sure.
For example, last year was terrible for tomatoes. Like everyone in this part of Virginia, they just did not do well. And ours didn't do great either. But the important thing about those bad years is that those are the best years for saving seeds, because anything that can make it through that, you'd have supercharged tomatoes. And so we saved all those seeds, and we saved the garlic that did best. And this year we bought garlic, and it's from a biodynamic source. It's just not our farm. Mm-hmm. But we have the same variety planted in the same bed, and the part that I know is mine is at least 6 to 8 inches taller than all the rest. There's no other treatment. So, like, these plants adapting to your space, it happens, and it can happen surprisingly fast.
And it's so important with the loss of 94% of our vegetable varieties. I mean, this is what farmers call hybridization. This is what Stuart is talking about. See, his tomatoes didn't do that well, but that was a survivor. So if the seeds from those tomatoes are really strong. So can you imagine those plants in great conditions? You know, there's a man that has a YouTube video. He's in Pennsylvania. Just Google biodynamic tomato plant and you'll come up with his link. And he's growing cherry tomato plants that are 12 feet tall. You need a ladder to harvest. He puts one in his mouth. He looks like a chipmunk. It's so big. It puffs his cheek out so much. And you send him a self-addressed stamped envelope and he'll send you some seeds.
That's great.
Awesome. Awesomeness. So everything has to be done at the same time, right? So now are you transplanting out as of yet?
Oh yeah. We've got greens out in the beds. We've got flowers started. We've got herbs out there. And just making sure to get that timing as close as possible. It gets so busy that, like, we try to follow the biodynamic planting calendar as right. closely as possible. So when we get a favorable flower time, we try to deal with flowering things and some aromatic herbs. But we don't always make that, honestly. So sometimes we'll put it at root times. We kind of consider, well, we want the roots growing of all our transplants, so we kind of cheat with that one.
Well, you know, it's not even really cheating because it's really important to have observations of planting certain seeds, you know, jot down. That's what I would do if I didn't plant it on the correct day based on the calendar, right? I would just make a little note, and then I would just, you know, take a look and see if there was any difference, you know, and when I would remember to take a note and then look at the note at the right time, there were differences. But even Steiner says, you know, we have to do our own research. This is not written in stone. We have to take it further into the new age. I mean, and that's what, and that is exactly what you are doing, you and your wife. Well, a few things I want to ask you. Number one, I want to ask you if you give workshops outside of your farm.
I do give workshops outside of our farm, and I've done webinars with the Biodynamic Association. I talked at the Pennsylvania Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture.
Nice.
And I've done other workshops too. I've done with the Virginia Tech here on composting, but yeah, we do a lot on our own farm.
Well, that's great because I've already, you know, just chatting with some of the people in my immediate circles, right, about this interview today, I already have a farm for you that up in New York State that would love for you to do a workshop in the fall. So I will connect you and Judy Smith. I just wanted to make sure that you did do workshops outside of the farm. And before we go, we have a little bit of time left. What are you spraying? And what have you? You know, you and I were spraying valerian. I thought that was awesome. The very same days, the very same time, this in March.
Yeah, we sprayed valerian out when it was getting very cold.
Yeah.
And all of our trees were in flower. And I'm like, oh, this is good. So we stirred valerian, and you don't need much. It's just a few drops. And you do that in some warm water, and then you just walk through the orchard. You spray all the flowers. And I'll be honest, we didn't lose any, and I know people, this stuff, it does work, and why it works, again, that people need to do their own research on that and try it themselves, but it does work. I've been using a lot of fermented equisetum. Just do a lot of that because we have a sandy soil, which it doesn't have a good holding capacity, so it loses a lot over time. But if you ferment Equisetum, you get silicic acid that's available for plants. It helps with photosynthesis, drought resistance. It helps if a plant doesn't have enough phosphorus. It helps if it has too much manganese. I mean, there's almost nothing it doesn't do, it seems, but I have been doing a lot of that through the garden just as things are transplanted, making sure that, you know, it just helps them really stick and they don't get any stress when they are treated that way.
And now from my take on the Equisetum, right? I would spray Equisetum just to bring in the light. And I knew nothing about what it had in it, but I knew, especially when I was up in Walker Valley, we'd get cloudy days day after day after day. And it really helped with funguses. And it was really very interesting.
Sure. That matches perfectly.
Yeah. So you're spraying the horsetail, the Equisetum. And anything else? Are you spraying Preparation 500?
Yes, we've put 500 out, and every time that I prepare a bed, we use a harrow instead of a tiller, so it doesn't invert any layers of the soil.
Nice.
But it still gets a nice fluffy bed.
Yeah.
When I do that, I like to have either Natalie or TJ stir something like a barrel compound or the 500, spray that over the area directly in front of where I'm basically incorporating whatever cover crop. So boom, it gets to work right away, coats all the surfaces, and you get much faster decomposition. And I've had really good luck doing that.
That's
in addition
awesome.
To that, it's such an easy way to do it. Like it's because and if you just incorporate a cover crop without some sort of stimulant like the 500, it could just sit there if the soil is not really alive for months, and you want that to decompose and be ready for the next wave of plants.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Preparation 500 is the horn manure compound, and that is for fertility.
The other thing we do now is we use barrel compound, which is we use that once a week behind our livestock rotation, because we do a mob grazing and they get a new section every single day. But then at the end of the week, we come back through everywhere they've been and where they currently are and spray that. So 2 years ago, much of the field didn't even have enough to be green, but it was just largely dead because we're taking it over from what was conventional, a lot of spraying. But it was no-till, so there were still at least some earthworms. But it was brown 2-3 years ago, and now it is like I'm having to mow it down because the grass is honestly some of it's 5 feet tall, and I can't keep up with it. Like it's insane, and it's through this mob grazing. We do deep ripping, and combined with all of the biodynamic preparations, and that it's just. It's an explosion, and people who've been here, who were here 5 years ago, and they see it now, you can't believe it.
Now, have you used any of the pepper sprays? Have you made any pepper sprays?
I have not made the peppers, but I've used them for squash bugs.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed initially, because insects seem to have some 4-year cycle, so you have to use it consistently over those 4 years. But once you've done that, I think it tends to help deter their reproduction. When I first used it, I noticed, and I don't know if this is because of that, but I noticed that their reproductive pattern seemed to have been disrupted. They, instead of having that tight cluster of eggs, they were kind of randomized. And they just didn't seem to do nearly as well that season. I was glad for that, but and I've also used a deer tick pepper because this is a heavy Lyme disease area, and we don't really want ticks on the farm. So those are the ones I've used.
Those are the two. I got a stink bug pepper spray from Hugh Courtney. And it really did the trick.
Good.
I really didn't have. Now, all of this stuff that we're talking about. Now these are listeners, and these are probably all like, what are they talking about? Pepper sprays. Where can the listener go to get more information, like connect with you? I know you're giving webinars for the BD Association. Are they still live?
Yeah, some of them are still up, and I'll be doing another one later this month, and a third later this year, and I may be doing more beyond that, but people are free to email me or contact me, because this is just what I do. It doesn't matter who they are. I talk to gardeners and farmers from around the world, because whatever their interest or problems are, it ends up shedding light on my own.
Well, we do learn that way, right? We learn from each other. And that brings me to my final question here. You know, most of the listeners have been connected with me via Facebook. I've been at this for a good 30 years insofar as the food realm is concerned, right? And Facebook is the way that I connect with people all over the world. And one of the best ways to do that is using Facebook Live. Now, if you would be interested, honey, I would let you be a contributor to the movement page, which would mean you would go live on your farm when you're doing certain things that you think it's important for people to see, like stirring or spraying, you know what I mean? And then this way they could see it live and in person. And what's great about it is it stays there forever, and it then can be shared, because the Farmyard podcast is all about exponentiality. I mean, if we want to spray the country, we have to move the information as quickly as possible. So that might be something that you might want to entertain.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. And I just hadn't thought of doing it yet, but yeah, I would definitely consider doing that, because there's plenty of activities there where, like, we're making a preparation or we're doing something else. I'm already explaining it to a group of people. There's no reason I can't also on video.
Right. Just pop open your phone, and I'll also add you as a member to the movement community. So this way, if they have specific questions, they could just direct them to you. You know what I mean? And there you go. We do in fact learn from each other. Well, I thank you so much, honey, for taking this time with your allergies so bad. When I first got on the phone with Stuart, we had like a nice hour conversation the other day. And when I talked to him today, I said, are you sick? He says, no, my allergies. Well, it's that grass. It's all that spraying you're doing. It's making it grow too quickly. And any kind of still shots, you know, that you want to send over, that would be great to add with the podcast, because we're about encouraging the backyard farmer. Right, Stuart? Anyone can call Josephine Porter Institute and get the Pfeiffer Field Spray and then continue with compost in a box. I mean, right? Yep.
Exactly. This is a central part to biodynamics that a lot of people kind of gloss over, is that when they asked questions to Rudolf Steiner about about other ways of making compost and new versions of agriculture, he refused to address them. And he said, continue enlivening your field the way that you normally do. Biodynamics is just added to that. So if you've got sustainable method of agriculture, cover crops, compost teas, all of that, biodynamics doesn't take away from that. It just helps those things work better together. And if you could just add it to your compost tea, there's all sorts of ways to integrate it into what you're doing. And it doesn't take that much time. I've spent hours and hundreds of dollars on things that just turned out to be positive harm to the farm because it didn't work. And all biodynamics asks is a periodic, just a stir and then a spray. And it's not onerous, but I've heard some people complain about the stirring, but it's, to me, there's a Zen saying which says that meditate half an hour a day unless you're too busy, then meditate an hour.
That's correct. You know, I actually look forward to the time I have scheduled to stir, because that's actually a time that I could be just with myself, because I can't be on the phone. You know, I can't be doing anything else but staying present to what I'm doing and planting my thought forms in that water. And I have stirred enough over the course of the years now that I can tell the difference in the water. It changes viscosity by the end of the hour. And I always judge it by how much I pumped in there. I want to feel it nice and thick, you know? Well, that's really great. That's really great, sir. I'm so glad to have you a member of the Farmyard movement, my dear. And I, honest to God, I can hardly wait to come visit you. And I am going to be making a trip out that way in July for my son's wedding. So on my way back, maybe I can plan a visit.
Well, it's a date.
It sounds great. Thanks again, honey, and you have a great day.
All right. You too.
Bye, love.
Next up on the Farmyard Podcast, Miraculous Mycelia with gourmet mushroom grower Matthew Lugatsky. This podcast is community supported. We thank everyone for tuning in, and a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farmyard, all one word, on patreon.com.